Okay, good morning. Some people make the mistake in thinking that Chag Chirut, our festival of freedom, is really Chag Chumrot, the festival of stringencies. Now, we have all sorts of Chumrot that people keep on Pesach. You know, some are widely accepted, some are outright crazy. Some are innocuous, but some come at the expense of one's sanity, of maybe one's family. There's a joke that nowadays we don't have a Korban Pesach. Instead, members of the family are the Korbanot in advance of Pesach. It's a little dark humor, I guess. And some Chumrot that people keep are outright dangerous. And if you take a look at the very last page here, there's an article that was published a few years ago, back in 2019, in Kikar HaShabbat, which is a news website for the Haredi community. And it says here that the Dayan, the Gaon, Rabbi Yisrael Greenberger, he ruled that it's not sufficient to brush one's teeth on Erev Pesach, but instead one has to perform Hagalah in their mouth. Okay, Hadayan Agon Rabbi Yisrael Greenberger Pasak, ki lo maspik litzachtzeach shinayim be'erev Pesach, it's not enough to brush your teeth. And he's, by the way, it says here, Rav Kila in Merkazei Chasidei Vizhnitz in Petach Tikva and Elad, very significant, well-known posek in the Vizhnitz world, in the Hasidic world. He's Umim Korav, Shel Hadmor Mi Vizhnitz. He's close to the Admor of Vizhnitz, the Vizhnitz Rebbe. And it says that it's not enough, according to him, to brush one's teeth on Erev Pesach. Tzarich lahagil et hapeh b'mayim rotchim. You have to kasher your mouth, perform Hagalah with boiling water, kidei levayer et hachametz, in order to get rid of any chametz in one's mouth. I mean, that's crazy. That's downright dangerous. And every year, unfortunately, you hear stories of people hurting themselves, either burning themselves with caustic materials, trying to clean the house for Pesach, which is completely unnecessary, or doing crazy things to kasher ovens, and they end up causing fires and burning the whole house down. I mean, just, you know, it's incredible how many people are admitted to the hospital on Erev Pesach trying to clean their homes for Pesach. So I'd like to explore together with you this morning the concept of Chumrah in general. What is the role of Chumrah? What is the place of Chumrah, of stringency in Jewish law and Jewish life? And then we'll also ask, in light of Pesach and in advance of Pesach, what is the place of Chumrah on Pesach, the Chag Chumrot? Okay, now Chumrah today has taken over. Chumrah today has taken over. I once gave a shiur on the topic of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, settling the land of Israel. Is it a mitzvah? Isn't it a mitzvah? What is the nature of the mitzvah? And someone said, Rabbi, if you want to convince people to do something, don't tell them that it's a mitzvah. Tell them that it's a chumrah, and then they'll do it. Right? People love chumrot. Chumrah has conquered at least many sectors of the Jewish world, the Torah world, the Orthodox world today. It used to be in the times of the Gemara, when Chazal would enact some sort of gzeirah, some sort of decree, they would see whether the people were able to keep that decree, whether it was something that the community could uphold. And you have a concept of a gzeirah she'ena tzibur yachol lamod ba, a decree that the tzibur, right, can't uphold. They just can't perform it. It's too difficult. And Chazal decided, therefore, not to impose that decree on the Jewish people, on the community, if it's something that's not realistic for them to observe. They repealed the gzeirah. They would often undo the decree. If it's a gzeirah she'en hatzibur yachol lamod ba. Now we have a different problem. Today there's a kula she'en hatzibur yachol lamod ba, as my Rebbe Rav Tendler Zatzal used to say. People can't handle kulot. They can't handle leniencies. People want stringencies. You know, you are asked a question, you paskin for someone, Rabbi, don't give me any leniencies. I'm a big boy. You know, tell it to me like it is. People, for some reason, are attracted to chumrot. But what becomes a problem, or when it becomes dangerous, is, like I said before, when that chumrah is at the expense of one's family, one's sanity, maybe at the expense of other mitzvot, maybe at the expense of other people. Or when that chumrah becomes a community standard, where one's society or one's community expects them to observe that chumrah. We'll see that chumrah is something that's very personal. A person takes on a stringency. It's a personal act of piety. It's not something that one's community can impose on them, or that one society can expect of them. But unfortunately, you know, we see today in many corners of the Jewish world that many chumrot have become societal expectations. So let's take a look at the first source. Here in source number one, this is a passage from the Vidui of Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, one of the great Gaonim. And this is a tefillah, a vidui, a confession that is recited by many on Erev Yom Kippur, before Kol Nidre. If you look in many machzorim, you have this vidui of Rabbeinu Nissim printed, along with Tfilat Zaka and other tefillot and viduyim. So there's a striking line. Here, a person is confessing to Hashem. They're pouring out their heart before God. They're reciting this vidui, this confession that was authored by Rabbeinu Nissim, right? One of the great Gaonim. And you know, among the lines is, Et asher tiharta timeti, what you made pure, I made impure. V'asher timeti tiharti, what you said was impure, I declared pure. Et asher hitarta asarti, what you allowed, I made forbidden. Okay, so already, what you allowed, I made forbidden. Which would seem to imply that it's not good to take on additional prohibitions where the Torah permits something. V'asher asarta hitarti, and what you asserted, what you Hashem prohibited, I declared permissible. Okay, we understand why that's a problem. Et asher ahavta saneti, what you loved, I hate, or I hated. V'asher saneti ahavti, and the opposite, what you Hashem hate in the Torah, I loved. And this next passage, or this next line, is key. Et asher hekalta hechemarti. Hashem, where you were lenient, where you were mekil, I was machmir. So you see, that is a problem. That is a problem. And this is something that Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon felt is worth confessing. Okay, pouring out one's heart to Hashem, and admitting that we've done something wrong. So you see that, according to Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, it's a problem. It's an error to be strict where the Torah requires you, where the Torah allows you to be lenient. And so here, take a look at the next source. This is the Rambam in Hilchot Deot. The Rambam, who, of course, always stresses the Shvil HaZahav, the Kav HaEmtzai, the golden mean or the middle path, moderation. The Rambam is always against extremes. And he emphasizes that in his Hilchot Deot here in the third perek. And he writes the following. He opens the third perek this way. He says, Shema yomar adam, lest the person say, Ho'il v'hakina v'atava v'kavod v'cheyotze behen, derech ra'ah hen u'motzin et adam min ha'olam. He's paraphrasing the Mishnah in Avot. Lest the person say that jealousy and desire and a desire for honor, etc., the like, you know, things like that are the wrong path there, an evil path, and they take a person out of this world, as the Mishnah in Avot says. So I'm going to go to the complete opposite end, the complete opposite extreme. That he's not going to eat meat or drink wine. He's not going to get married. He's not going to live in a nice home, right? Person wants to divorce himself from all material things, all material concerns, and live the life of a monk, okay? live a life of asceticism. V'lo yilbash malbush na'eh. He won't wear nice clothes. Ela hasak v'atzemer hakashev v'chiyotze ben. He's going to wear sackcloth and unfinished wool, etc., and the like. Kigon kohanei akum, like the priests of the Gentiles. Okay, he's referring to the Christian priests who deny themselves all physical pleasures. They take vows of celibacy, vows of poverty, and they live the life of a monk, cloistered away. They take vows of silence even. Gamzo derech rahi, v'asur lelechba. The Rambam says that too is the wicked path. That is the wrong path, and it's prohibited to go in that way, go in that path. V'amalech b'derech zo nikra choteh. And one who does this is called a sinner. Sherei omer b'nazir v'chiper alav me'asher chata ala nefesh. Amru chachamim, uma im nazir shelo parash ela min hayayin tzirich kapara hamoneh atzmo mikol davar v'davar alachat kama v'chama. Okay? So, he quotes from Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Vav, concerning the Nazir. The Nazir has to bring a Korban Chatat. Why does the Nazir bring a sin offering? For the Rambam, it's for the sin of having divorced himself from this physical world, asuring himself from wine. And he quotes the Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit that says, wow, if the Nazir who swore off wine needs atonement, all the more so someone who takes prohibitions upon himself and prohibits himself from all sorts of other things. Alachat kama v'chama, all the more so, kal v'chomer. So the Rambam sees the Nazir not as the ideal, but really as something that, okay, there's a certain place for it. Chazal noticed the smichat aparshot between the Nazir and the Sota, and say that the Nazir sees the Sota in her degradation, and then he decides to swear off wine, he decides to separate himself from these sorts of things. But the Rambam sees that while it's a mitzvah in the Torah, and maybe there is a need for it, but that is not the ideal. The ideal is finding a balance in this world, okay? And enjoying this physical world, obviously not becoming a slave to the pleasures of this world, but certainly one may enjoy this physical world, but it's about a balance, a healthy balance. And that's something that the Rambam stresses here and elsewhere as well, okay? Now, just parenthetically, I'll mention that you could argue that there is another trend, another way of looking at things. The Ramban, for instance, understands the kapara, or the atonement, or the chatat, the sin offering that the Nazir has to bring, because he was the Nezer HaKodesh. He reached a state of sanctity, of holiness, by separating himself from this physical world. And in doing so, he became like the Kohen Gadol. Just as the Kohen Gadol cannot be metameh himself even for one of his close relatives when they pass away, so too the Nazir. So in a sense, he sanctified himself. And the Ramban sees the offering of this Korban Chatat because he has sinned in that now he's returning to everyday life following his period as a Nazir, following his vow as a Nazir. When it, on the culmination of the vow, he has to bring this Korban Chatat because, you know, for the sin, so to speak, of returning to the regular world after having sanctified himself. And it could be that that's the Ramban l'shitato, the Ramban on Kiddushim to you at the beginning of Parshat Kiddushim. The Ramban explains that a person, if they just follow all the mitzvot according to the letter of the law, they can end up being a menuval birshut haTorah. They're, you know, technically following the letter of the law, but they're not a holy person. They are, you know, a disgusting person, so to speak. But the mitzvah of Kiddushim Tiyu, according to the Ramban, is that a person has to separate himself from this physical world to some degree. Okay, we'll try towards the end of the shiur to make sense of that and to understand, even if a person wants to separate himself in a certain area, a person wants to take on certain chumrot and deny himself certain things, we'll see what the parameters of that are. Okay, so it's possible that there are other approaches, but certainly the approach of the Rambam here is that we have to find a balance, and taking stringencies upon oneself is not necessarily the right thing. And then the Rambam continues and says this explicitly, l'fichach, Therefore, tzivu chachamim shelo yimna adam atzmo ela midvarim shemina atu hatorah bilvat. The chachamim said that a person should not prohibit himself from things except the things where the Torah itself prohibited. Okay, v'lo ye oser atzmo midarim u'bishvuot al dvarim hamutarim. A person shouldn't prohibit himself with nidarim and shvot, different kinds of oaths and vows for things that are permissible. Okay, and when one, let's say, is machmir, and one has a certain hanhaga, that one is not going to eat this type of food or do this type of thing, in a sense, they are prohibiting themselves. They're taking something that is permitted and making it prohibited to them. If it's permissible, mi karadin, if the halacha says that it's permissible, but they want to be machmir. So, in a sense, they are taking on isurim. They're assuring this thing upon themselves, and it has the status of a neder if one acts in a certain way, okay, without explicitly stipulating that it's not, they're not doing it with a neder. Kach amru chachamim, this is what the sages say here. The Rambam is quoting the Gemara here. Where are we? It's actually Yerushalmi in Masechet Nedarim. Lo dayecha masha asrat Torah. Is it not enough what the Torah prohibited? Ela shata osera lecha dvarim acherim. But you want to make more things prohibited to you? Take on additional prohibitions? Ubiklal hazeh, and included in this is elu shemit anim tamid. Those who engage in fasts constantly, that's not the proper way. And the sages said, our sages prohibited what? That a person constantly engage in fasts, torture himself, literally pain himself with fasts. Lama tisomeim. Quotes a pasuk from Kohelet, Perek Zion. Don't be such a tzaddik. Don't be such a chacham. Meaning, you have to find the right balance. Strike a healthy balance in even your religious service of God. Okay? So that is the derech of the Rambam. A healthy, balanced approach to Jewish law. And I think the Rambam would be very surprised and upset with many of the chumrot that are observed today. You see how dangerous chumrah can be from the first sin, the chet of Adam harishon, the chet of Adam and Chava. And just for the sake of time, I'm going to summarize, but we got started a little late this morning. But if you take a look at source number 3, the Midrash in Breishit Rabbah notices that initially Hashem tells Adam and Chava they are not to eat umipri ha'etz asher betoch hagan, from the fruit that is in the garden. The Midrash begins, they're not to eat from. Okay? However, when Chava has this conversation with the Nachash, the snake, she said that not only are we not allowed to eat from the tree, we're not allowed to touch the tree. Okay, velo tigubo. She adds something. And so Chazal and the Medrash are sensitive to this, that really the entire, let's say, strategy of the Nachash was to foul up Chava in that she added to the mitzvot HaTorah, or to this mitzvah. Right? Hashem tells them, you are not to eat from the tree of knowledge. And she added to the prohibition. And so the Medrash here indicts her for adding to the Tzivui Hashem. Okay? And there's a line here, Tani Rebbi Chia, Shelo ta'aseh tageder yoter min ha'ikar, Shelo yipol v'kitzatz hanitiyot. You shouldn't make the fence greater than the ikar, greater than the primary issue. Okay? In other words, you shouldn't put a fence around something greater than necessary, larger than necessary. Shelo yipol v'kitzatz hanitiyot. It shouldn't fall down And then what? Crush the little saplings. Crush the little trees coming up. Okay? So what the Medrash seems to be saying is that ultimately, by Chava adding to the Tzivoy Hashem, that was ultimately her downfall. By her being machmir, if you will, okay? Not only are we not allowed to eat it, but she added this chumrah of not touching. She made a fence too high, and that ultimately led to her downfall. That's what the Midrash is saying, okay? And the Midrash continues, I'm skipping, but kevan shirah ota uveret lifnei ha'etz nadla v'dachfa alav, right? So the Midrash goes ahead and says that after Chava told this to the Nachash, what did he do? He saw she was passing by the tree. So he pushes her. He pushes her onto the tree. Amarla, halo mitat here. You haven't died. You touched the tree and nothing happened. You see? So, kema de lo mitat mikirvei, ken lo mitat bimichlei. Just as nothing happened when you touched the tree, right? So too, you won't die if you eat from it. So here, the Medrash is stressing just how dangerous it could be to add to the Tzivoy Hashem. And Rav Hirsch in his comments there, here in source number 4, he emphasizes this, and he says, El alanu lishkoach et makor ha-sayagim. Or, sorry, alanu. Alanu lishkoach et makor ha-sayagim. She's hazihirut. She's his hirot. Hayudit. Hitila aleinu. We shouldn't forget the source of siagim, the source of prohibitions. Okay, how Judaism warns us, and we should remember constantly, we have to remember that the siagim are not min ha-Torah. Rak kol od niskor, so we have to remember, heim yulanu asara v'siag, they're only there to warn us, they're only there as a fence. Im nishkach et ofim zef, we forget this important character. Im nire gam otam kimipi ha-gvura, if we conflate them with mitzvot, if we assume that they also come from Hashem, taviotano havera alehem lavor gam al mitzvot Hashem. Chas v'shalom, what can happen is we will come to violate even the tzivui Hashem. If we conflate chumrah with a mitzvah, oy vavoy, says Rav Hirsch. Okay, and he's saying this based on this midrash that we just saw together. So you have to be careful. Again, we'll come back to what then the role is of Chumrah. And by the way, it's important to point out that when we're talking about Chumrah this morning, we're not talking about where there's a safek didina, where there's a doubt as to what the halakha is, what the law is. In such a case, we invoke the principle of safek d'oraita l'chumrah. If it's a Torah law, we are machmir. We have to be stringent with a Torah law. If there's a doubt concerning the performance of a Torah law, we are obligated. Safeg derabanan lekula. We can be lenient if it's only a rabbinic mitzvah, only rabbinic enactment, rabbinic institution. But here we're talking about, no, not where it's a doubt as to this mitzvah. How is it to be performed? Other types of sveikot, without going into the whole concept of suffix. But we're talking about where there's a halakha and there's a clear way to observe this mitzvah, and there's a way that's accepted and permissible, but then a person wants to go above and beyond and be machmir. Okay? Add to the tzivoy Hashem, so to speak. Okay. Now, sometimes, and this is also a problem, sometimes chumrah is used to flaunt one's piety, right? People are motivated to be machmir in order to show off, in order to flaunt their piety, and that's something called yuhara. You have many different examples. I put here in source number 5, the Mishnah from the second parak of Masechet Brachot, that says that chatan patur mikriyat shma balayla harishon, ad motzei shabbat, im lo asa ma'aseh. Chatan, a groom, is exempt from reciting Kriyat Shema, which is a mitzvah min haTorah, but the Chazal said that he's exempt so long as he has not consummated the marriage. He's tarud b'mitzvah, he's busy, he has his mind elsewhere, he won't have the proper concentration, okay? So Ma'ase b'Rabbi Gamliel shekara b'layla rishon shenasa. So Rabbi Gamliel, he didn't follow that. He read the Shema on the first night after he was married. Amru lo talmidav lo lamara tanu rabbeinu shechatan patur mikriat Shema b'layla rishon. Didn't our rabbi teach us that the chatan is exempt on the first night following the wedding? Amar lahem, so he said, Eini shomei alachem levatel mimeni malchut shamayim afilu sha'achat. I'm not going to listen to you even for a moment, okay, to prevent me from accepting upon myself the yoke of heaven, which we do by reciting Kriyat Shema. Okay, I'm not going to listen to you even for a moment to miss out on this opportunity to accept the yoke of heaven. So it's possible, though, Rabbi Gamliel was the exception to the rule. Okay, Rabbi Gamliel maybe was able to maintain the proper concentration. And then the Mishnah, it's not the next Mishnah, it's Mishnah Chet. Chatanim ratza likrot kriyat shma layla rishon kore. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer lo kol harotze litol et Hashem yitol. And this Mishnah here is important for our conversation this morning. The Mishnah begins that if a chatan wants to, even though he's exempt, we said he's exempt, even though he is not obligated to say the Kriyat Shema because he's tarud b'mitzvah, he has his mind elsewhere, he won't be able to properly focus, okay? So, but if he wants to, he may, right? And then Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said, no, not everyone who wants to take Hashem's name may just take Hashem's name, meaning if you're not going to be able to concentrate, you know, Chazal said you're exempt. Right? Don't be such a chacham, as we said before. Okay, so the reason is because it's yuhara. It would be yuhara for a person to say that I'm exempt, right? Chatanim are exempt. I'm exempt from reciting Kriyat Shema, but I'm going to do it anyway, right? Well, who are you now? If you're Rabbi Gamliel, enachinami. Okay, no problem. But who are you now? What's fascinating is Tosfos here in source number 6, and this is how we paskin today. Tosfos says, nowadays, it's just the opposite. Nowadays, we assume that no one has the proper concentration the entire year, right? This chassan, the whole year, he doesn't daven shema with the requisite kavana. And so therefore, nowadays, we say that a chatan must recite the kriyat shema. And if a person says the opposite, I'm not going to recite Kriyat Shema the night of my wedding. Why? Because I won't be able to properly concentrate. That implies that the rest of the year, he prays with tremendous concentration. And so that's called Yuhara, right? So once upon a time, it was Yuhara to say, even though the Chachamim said that I'm exempt from reciting Kriyat Shema because I have my mind elsewhere and I can't properly concentrate, but I'm going to do it anyway, that was Yuhara. Nowadays, if you say, I'm not going to recite the Shema, right, on the wedding night because I don't have such proper concentration, but that would imply that the rest of the year you have tremendous kavana. So that's called yura. Take a look at Tosfos where I find it. Umihu anu shebishum pam ein anu mechuvanim heitev. Us nowadays, we never have the proper kavana. Gam chatan yesh likrot. So nowadays the chatan also must recite the Shema on his wedding night. The adarabit, because it's just the opposite. Nira ki yura im lo yikre. It's the opposite. It's yuara, right? For him to say that, no, I'm not going to recite the Shema tonight because I won't have the proper kavana. That implies that the rest of the year, that every other time he's got tremendous kavana. Okay? So it's just the opposite. So you see that sometimes it's inappropriate to be machmir, at least in a public way, because that is yuara, that is flaunting one's piety. Now, certain individuals may have the authority to do so, like Rabban Gamliel, but not everyone's a Rabban Gamliel, okay? And if you take a look here at source number 7, just another example of this concept of yuara is tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, okay? Many Hasidim wear the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, the Eidot HaMizrach wear the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, but the Shulchan Aruch writes that, you know, it's not for everyone. In Hilchot Tefillin, in Siman Lamed Daled, where I've underlined, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Lo yaseh ken ela mi shemuchzak umufursam b'chassidut. Only people that are, it's established and well known that they are pious individuals, they can wear tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. Ultimately, tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam is a chumrah. You're saying what? We paskin like Rashi and the Rambam, right? That the order of the parshiot should be this way. You want to be machmir and put on an extra pair of tefillin just in case, okay? So before you do that, you engage in that chumrah, in that stringency in a public way, right? By the way, it's recorded that the Vilna Gaon, who wore the tefillin constantly, every moment, and believed that every moment you're wearing them, it's a mitzvah, and he wouldn't take them off for a moment, wore them all day long, and wore the tefillin of Rashi, and was asked, what about tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam? He said, well, if I want to be machmir for the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, I'd have to wear 64 different pairs of tefillin to be machmir for all the different shitot, and all the different deos, and all the different possible stringencies and different opinions, etc. So you see that even the Vilna Gaon didn't wear the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. Here the Shulchan Aruch is saying only one who is well known for his piety should wear the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. By Chabad, every 13-year-old boy at his bar mitzvah gets tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, but maybe they interpret this statement or this sentence in the Shulchan Aruch a little bit differently, that if you're muchzak umeforsim b'chassidut, since they are chassidim, they're all chassidim, even a 13-year-old is muchzak umeforsim b'chassidut, maybe, I don't know. But you see that, at least in the past, it used to be that before a person was going to flaunt their piety, they had to be on such a level. And it's a problem if a person is using chumrah in a public way in order to flaunt their piety. We'll see that ultimately chumrah is something that's supposed to be personal, private, okay? Now sometimes the danger is that a stringency can come at the expense of another, okay? And here I put in sources 9 and 10 a very extreme example, okay? But nonetheless, sometimes dibru chachamim belashon guzma, our sages speak in exaggerations and hyperbole to prove a point. Okay, they, even in the laws of logic and argument, there's an argument what is it called? Where you take a very extreme position to prove a point. Straw man, huh? There's some Latin name for it. Ad absurdum, yeah, I think that's what it is, ad absurdum. You take, an absurd position to prove a point. Well, there's a concept in the Gemara of a chassid shote. I think, unfortunately, you see a lot of them nowadays. What's a chassid shote? Literally a pious fool. I would define it as false piety. A person has their values mixed up. Okay, so the Gemara in Masechet Sota and Daf Chaf Aleph here in source number 9 says, Hechi dami chassid shote. What is an example of a chassid shote? Kigon, for example, dekat tava itta binahara. He sees a young lady drowning in a river, the Amar, and he says to himself, Lav orech ara liistakule ba the atsula. It's not proper for me to look at young ladies in the water and go in there and save her. It's pasnished. And Tosfot there in source number 10 cites from the Yerushalmi, similar example, where a person sees a baby or a child drowning in the river. And he says, well, first let me take off my tefillin. And once my tefillin are off, right? And again, he wants to be machmir, take off my tefillin. And when my tefillin are off, then I'll go in. And by then it's too late, right? Kishu choletz tefillin hotziet. By the time he takes his tefillin off and jumps in the water, the child is already drowned and is dead. So sometimes chumrah can come at the expense of another. Here, the Gemara and Tosfos, based on the Yerushalmi, is talking about a life or death situation. Okay, it's an extreme example. But sometimes it can even be, at the expense of someone's feelings, of hurting someone. Sometimes it could be at the, you can inconvenience others or upset others. Anyone who's ever been on a flight to Israel or out of Israel knows that sometimes people want to be machmer and they don't want to sit next to a woman on an airplane, but in the process, they cause a whole commotion, and the flight leaves late, and there's a whole balagan. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he was asked, what about traveling on buses and subways in New York City during rush hour, when people are packed in like sardines, and you can't help but being pressed up against a woman or a member of the opposite sex? Is that prohibited? Is it better not to take the bus or not to take the train? So Rav Moshe says, no, it's permitted. Why? Because it's not called derech chiba or derech tava. You know, grazing against a member of the opposite sex, for at least a normal person, it's not called derech chiba v'tava. It's not called desire or affection. That's not affectionate touching. Okay? So, you know, you have to be careful when being machmir, not to do it at the expense of another. Okay, I remember hearing a story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, how Rav Shlomo Zalman, he would sit on buses. First of all, he would take buses, you know, Gedolim of previous generations took buses, public transportation. He would sit on the bus, and if a woman who was not properly dressed or not dressed modestly came on the bus and sat next to him, he wouldn't make a fuss, he wouldn't make a commotion, he wouldn't get up, he would wait till the bus went to the next stop, and then he would exit off the bus, even if it was before the stop that he was going towards, even if it was before his destination. Okay? And then maybe he would get back on another bus, you know, but he wouldn't do it at the expense of another. And that is very important when we talk about chumrah. It can't be at the expense of another. Okay? All right. So you have to have the right priorities, okay? You have to have the right priorities. Whenever you are machmir, okay, in one area, it comes at the expense of something else. Your maybe makil in another area. So, you know, sometimes here it could come at the expense of another person. Sometimes it could come at the expense of waste. We'll talk about Pesach in a few moments. I remember seeing many times people take perfectly good boxes of unopened pasta and all sorts of food that can be sold, but they don't want to be they want to be machmir. They don't want to rely on mechiras chametz, on the sale of chametz. So they throw it out. So sometimes when you're machmir in one area, it comes at the expense, you're mekil in another area. They're being machmir in Hilchos Pesach, and mechiras chametz, they're being mekil in Bal Tashchis, right? Unnecessarily wasting good food. But you see the sensitivity, though, in the poskim. If you skip to source number 12 here, this is a very short tshuva of Rav Moshe in the first chelik of Yoredeya, in the Igrot Moshe, or the Igros Moshe, where he's talking about blended whiskeys. Very important tshuva about blended whiskeys. So he permits blended whiskey, okay? And he writes, this line here where I've underlined is important for us this morning. V'ani af shani matir nizharani ba'atzmi milishtot blended. Right? Even though I've permitted it, I personally am machmir, and I'm careful not to drink blended whiskey, rak bechabura, unless I'm in a group. Shelo lemechse ki yuhara, that it not look like yuhara, like I'm showing off, like I'm flaunting my piety, like we said before. Hayiti shote mashu levarech hamesubin kinahuk. I'll make a l'chaim with people. People offer me l'chaim, I'm not going to turn it down. You know, and you find that many rabbis, at least rabbis with a good head on their shoulders, while they personally might be machmir in a certain area, but they don't impose their chumrah on others. We'll see very soon that chumrah is something that's very personal. Okay? And in fact, it's known that Rav Moshe allowed the chalav ha-companies, chalav stam, right? Milk in the United States, where you have the FDA and an oversight agency that regulates the production of milk. You're not concerned that there's any pig milk or cow milk mixed in, camel milk mixed into your cow milk, right? So he felt you can use milk. It doesn't have to be Chalav Yisrael. But personally, he drank Chalav Yisrael, right? there are many rabbis that live in a community where there's a communal Eruv, and they personally may not rely on the Eruv. They allow the Eruv, they permit the Eruv for the members of their community. The laws of Eruvin are very, very complicated. I'll just put it at that. Not so simple what we do. Every community has an Eruv, really not so simple. Major, major machloket haposkim. But, okay, he doesn't want to impose that chumrah, but he personally won't carry, right? That is unless he leaves the notes to his Shabbos HaGadol drasha at home. but you have many examples like that. So if a person wants to be machmer gesuntahei, but it shouldn't come at the expense of others, and they shouldn't impose their chumrot on others, even on their community. As we'll see, chumrah is something very personal. Here at source number 13 is a Mishnah in Masechet Yevamot, where, and this is really an incredible Mishnah. Afal pi she'elu osrin ve'elu matirin. It's talking about Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, right? And when it came to very serious matters, matters of chalitza and yibu, matters of which could be mamzerut, okay, all sorts of very serious matters where they disagreed completely, and one elu osrin ve'elu matirin, one asr, one prohibited and one allowed. One permitted, elu poslin ve'elu machshirin, one invalidated and one said is fit, is permissible. Lo nimne'u beit shamai milisan nashim mi beit hilel, ve'lo beit hilel mi beit shamai. Even though they differed to such a degree that could affect the yuchasin of such a union, but nevertheless, they didn't prevent their children from marrying one another. The children of Beit Shammai married with the children of Beit Hillel. That is a very profound statement in the Mishnah. Such an important point, so relevant for today. When, person relies on the Heter Mechira during the Shemitah year, right? Oh, I can't go to their house. I can't eat in their house. Right? Can't talk to them. No. But it's important that we have the right perspective and recognize that if a person relies on a valid psak, an acceptable psak, even though you personally or your community doesn't rely on that particular psak, you want to be machmir, okay. But again, how tragic if it ultimately comes at the expense of Jewish harmony and Jewish unity. And so I think this Mishnah here in Yevamot is so important. Okay. So, as I mentioned before, there is a concept of kidoshim tihiyu, and yes, sometimes separating oneself from even things that are permitted. And here, the Mesilat Yesharim in source number 14, the Ramchal in his famous work, Mesilat Yesharim, he quotes from the Gemara in Yevamot and Daf Chaf, Kadesh Atzmecha B'mutar Lach. Right? How do you sanctify yourself? There's a mitzvah of kidoshim to you. The Ramban writes that, a failure to do so, a person can fall into the trap of being a minuval b'reshut Torah. So Chazal say, kadesh atzmecha b'mutar lach. But how do you do that? Okay? And here, he quotes, kidoshim to you, prushim to you. Take a look at where I've underlined next. The Ramchal asks, v'im tishal v'tomar, if you ask and say, im kein, right? If we are supposed to sanctify ourselves, even with the things that are permitted to us, and we're supposed to separate ourselves from the things that are permitted to us, separate ourselves to a certain degree from the physical world in order to achieve a level of kedusha, of sanctity, if that is something that's necessary, so why didn't Chazal make all sorts of enactments and decrees concerning chumrot, just as they did, right, with their enactments and decrees, their gzeirot and their takanot? Hinei hatshuva mivu'eret u'pshuta. The answer is clear and simple. Ki lo gazru chachamim gzeira ela im kein rov tzibur yicholim lamod ba. First of all, they can only make a decree that the tzibur, the majority of the tzibur, can uphold, as we said earlier. And additional stringencies, even in the pursuit of piety or of sanctity, it's not something that everyone can uphold. It's not something that's practical. Not everyone can reach this level of piety. Not everyone can be chassidim. Right? He's writing in the 18th century. He's not talking about the Hasidic movement, but it just means not everyone can reach this level of chassidut that Chazal talk about piety. Aval dai lahem shiu tzadikim. Halavai, they should just be righteous. What's the difference between a righteous person and a tzaddik and a chassid, a pious person? So the pious person goes lifnim mishurat adin. That's what he means. The pious person, the chassid, goes above and beyond the letter of the law. But those unique individuals, those yichidei zgula who want to come close to God, they, those unique individuals that want to achieve this level of piety, they may do so. They can go above and beyond the letter of the law. They can engage in different types of stringencies and what? Separate themselves, right? Kadesh atzmecha b'ma shemutar lach. Sanctify themselves and separate themselves from things that are permitted, take on additional stringencies. But these are unique individuals, and these are individuals. What the Ramchal is saying is that chumrah is something that is personal. It's a personal act of piety. It's not something that Chazal can decree or demand of us. It's not something that communities can demand of us. And the problem is when chumrah becomes a societal expectation, okay? And oftentimes, chumrah in many communities, chumrah is understood as frumkeit, or frumkeit implies chumrah. And that's why you have all these crazy chumrot, and you see it especially on Pesach. And that's why I wanted to have this discussion in advance of Pesach. Because of all these crazy chumrot, which can sometimes be an imposition on one's family, on one's financial situation, and can sometimes come at the expense of, again, of one's family, or one's sanity, or even one's safety. Like this crazy idea here at the last page, where this rabbi, back in 2019, this Dayan in the Vizhnitz community, and he's a rabbi in the Vizhnitz community, close with the Rebbe, who said that it's not sufficient to brush one's teeth on Erev Pesach, but you have to perform Haggadah. You have to pour boiling water down your mouth, down your throat, to clean your teeth, just as you would pour over your counters boiling water. Or you would immerse a cup in, or a pot or something, into a vat of boiling water. I'm just glad he didn't require libun with a blowtorch, okay? To put a blowtorch in your mouth. I mean, this is crazy. So the problem is that sometimes these chumrah, and that chumrah has not become accepted. But unfortunately, sometimes these chumrah become accepted, become expectations in certain communities. And they conflate, right, chumrah with frumkeit. You want to be frum, you have to be machmir. The more machmir you are, that means the frumer you are. Okay? So anyone, of course, can be machmer. There's an expression in the first parak of Masechet Beitzin and elsewhere, koach deheteira adif. Literally, the strength of leniency is preferable. Okay, from the strength of a lenient argument, you can learn a lot more. It's very easy just to be machmer. Anyone can be machmer. Okay, it takes some lumdus to be mekil. My Rebbe Rav Tendler Zatzal once shared that once Simchas Torah, someone who had a little too many l'chaims, came to Rav Moshe Feinstein, who spent a lot of time in Muncie with my Rebbe and his family. So he asked Rav Moshe, why is he always mekil? And Rav Moshe turned to my Rebbe Rav Tendler Zatzal, his son-in-law, and said, what, they want that I should paskin against the halacha? Once upon a time, rabbis looked for solutions. Today, unfortunately, rabbis look for problems. It's a problem. It's a problem because chumrah, as we saw, is something that, okay, a person can take on. It can be meaningful even in their avodat Hashem. But Rav Moshe believed that godlos, that greatness, is really about normal kite. And as we saw in the Rambam, Judaism is not about asceticism. It's not about extremism. It's not about fanaticism. It's about balance, a healthy balance. And so we'll take a look at a couple of interesting sources related to Pesach, okay? So take a look at source number 15. This is from the Sichot HaRan, the conversations of Rabbi Nachman as recorded by his student Rabbi Natan. He writes the following, where I've underlined. This is Siman Reish Lamed Hei in the Sichot HaRan. Shrabbeinu Zichron Livracha, he's here ma'od, livli lahachmir chumrot yiterot, b'shum davar, ki ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba betrunya im briotav, ve'lo nitna HaTorah l'malachi asharet. Our rabbi, meaning Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, warned that a person should not take upon himself in any area any sort of stringency, because God does not come to his people like a tyrant. He does not approach us like a tyrant with tyranny. And the Torah wasn't given to Malachei HaSharet, to the ministering angels. The Torah was given to human beings, to flesh and blood. Okay, and then he continues with this story, and says that, you know, Rabbi Nachman believed that one should never be stringent, and even on Pesach, and he didn't agree with all of this. And he goes ahead and records the story. He relates the story about how Rabbi Nachman was once machmir on Pesach, and it sank him into a deep, dark depression. If you know anything about Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, the worst sin in the world, the most egregious sin, is being depressed. The Yetzer Hara first tries to get you to foul you up and to get you to do something wrong. And then, what's even worse, he wants to make you depressed so you won't be able to come out of it. And you won't be able to fix what you did wrong, to repair what you did wrong. Okay? And he shares that Rabbi Nachman used to be worried about the drinking water on Pesach, right? Maybe there was a small amount of chametz in it. So he would go to this special place to get water. He would draw water from this flowing spring before Pesach. And one year, he was not able to obtain the water from this spring. He was traveling, and it was very far from him, from where he was spending Pesach. And he couldn't find a flowing spring to draw water from to make sure that there's no chametz in the water, right? He wouldn't just go to any well. You know, maybe a guy was eating a sandwich with some bread as he's drawing the water and some chametz came in. So this sunk Rabbi Nachman into a deep, dark depression. And so he warned that even on Pesach, it's inappropriate to be machmir, and a person should not search for additional chumrot, additional stringency, even on Pesach. And he concluded the following. I'll just read it in English for the sake of time. Okay. The Rebbe spoke about this at length and concluded, true devotion consists mainly of simplicity and sincerity. Pray much, study much Torah, do many good deeds, and do not worry yourself with unnecessary restrictions. Just walk in the way of our forefathers. Serve Hashem simply with what the Torah requires. Here, there's a tshuva. Source number 16, we're almost out of time. This comes from the Orach Mishpat of Rav Kook, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kook. This is Orach Mishpat Siman Kuf Chav Dalet. A nice tshuva where he talks about the mitzvah of Achilat Maror and the custom that many have to use fresh horseradish. They grind up fresh horseradish and they eat Maror that way. Okay? So he writes the following. He writes that if the maror is too strong, that's not called eating. The mitzvah is achilat maror. You have to eat it, right? What's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to eat the maror. And if it's so strong that steam is coming out of your nostrils and coming out of your ears, that's not called eating. But here he writes, Al kein nirale niyot dati, dezeo haderech haratzui, gam kein mitzadikara mitzvah, gam mishum deracheha darchei noam. He adds a very important point, a very important principle. He invokes Mishlei Perek Gimel. The ways of the Torah are pleasant. The ways of the Torah are pleasant, and all of its paths are peace. The Torah has to be pleasant. It's not supposed to cause us pain, especially important to remember as we prepare for Pesach. We'll end with a couple of nice stories. There's a story told about the great Hasidic master, Reb Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev, who was famous for being very scrupulous when baking matzah for Pesach. You know, a lot of Rebbes go with their chassidim and they bake matzah and it's a whole avoda and they even put on the strimal and the bekisha. Right? Well, there's a mitzvah to bake the matzah yourself. The Torah records how his father, the Rosh, used to bake it himself. Mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. It's better to do a mitzvah yourself than have someone else do it for you. You got to roll up your sleeves and do it. I was fortunate to spend many years baking matzah with my Rebbe, Rav Tendler Zatzal, at the Schatzer Matzah Factory on Cortelyou in Brooklyn. So Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev was famous for being so machmir and so scrupulous with baking the matzah. And one year, he took ill and was unable to bake the matzah himself. So his chassidim asked him, Rebbe, you know, what should we do? Please instruct us. Give us detailed instructions exactly where we need to be machmir, all the chumros, all the hidurim, what we should do in order to bake the matzah to your liking. And the Rebbe answered, let me tell you where you should be most stringent, where you should be most machmir. You should be most machmir with how you speak to the women, the poor women and the widows that work in the matzah bakery. Okay, don't raise your voice at them. Things can get crazy inside of a matzah factory. Things can get heated. Things can get intense. You got to finish within 18 minutes. So he told his chassidim, you're asking me where is it appropriate? How should we be machmir in baking matzah? Make sure you're machmir in how you speak to these women working in the matzah bakery. The same Reb Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev used to wish people a kosher Purim and a freilichen Pesach. Right? Just the opposite of what you'd expect. You should say, no, you wish people a freilich in Purim and a kosher Pesach, a chag kasher v'sameach, right? So he wished them the opposite of the traditional greetings. Why? Because he explained that on Purim, the tendency is to go overboard, right? People get out of hand. Just come to Har Nof, you'll see. So he wished people a kosher Purim. Your Purim should be kosher, all right? Your Purim should be kosher and your Pesach should be freilich. Don't go so crazy with all sorts of chumras at the sacrifice of your Simchas Yontif. Okay, we leave the Seder table with the taste of the afikomen on our tongues. How tragic if the Passover preparation with all of these unnecessary chumros, how tragic if they leave a bitter taste in our mouths. And with that, we will wish you all a kosher Purim and a Freilich in Pesach. Okay? Take care. Have a wonderful day. We will see you, Mirtz Hashem, next week.